Now we're recording.
And so we are.
Okay, so hey, we're back with a Lean Into Artcast, the show for visual storytellers of all stripes, whether that makes you a cartoonist, a animator, a illustrator, photographer, public speaker, teacher, anybody who's using images to convey information. Did I miss anything in there, Rob Stenzinger of interactive-storyteller.com?
I would say I like the umbrella category of artisan.
Artisan. That's kind of a dangerous word to use nowadays, though, with in the world of comedy. You know, everybody's using the word artisanal to make fun of, you know.
Sure. Well, if you enunciate the final couple syllables, especially, laughing voice I hear on the other side, Jersey Drozd of comicsaregreat.com.
Comics are great. That's another show that I do, too. It's not just the expression of joy. It is also a video internet show. You got mentioned on the last show, the most recent one. Did a little name dropping. Like, this guy I know, this famous guy, Rob, he said this thing. I had Eli Nyberger on and Josh Elder of readingwithpictures.org, and we were talking about the future of licensing for digital media. Mm. And we got to talking about SEO guru types. And I brought up the thing you said in a recently Lean Into Artcast. I think it was, I'm going to misquote it, but it ran something along the line of, whenever you hear somebody say that I'm a Twitter coach who can get you 1,000 followers, that means I represent 900 thumbs ups or 900 votes.
Sure. Yeah. I'm a walking million votes or something.
I'm a walking million votes. Yeah. And then to which Eli said, a million votes to what? And I said, exactly. You know?
Sure.
Yeah.
You know what? I forgot to tell you, Jersey, you just won 2 billion Rob bucks.
Rob bucks.
Yep.
We should start using those on Lean Into Art. I use bonus unicorn points in my classrooms. I think on the podcast, we should start using Rob bucks. Anybody who emails us a really interesting question or thought or wondering for us to contemplate on the show at leanintoart@gmail.com, you will get 5 Rob bucks.
Exactly. It'll take you a while to accumulate the riches of Jersey Drozd in Rob bucks. You know, he's been accumulating for quite a while, and I finally got around to reading him his balance.
Yeah. Rob wrote me a check made out to cash in Rob bucks. Yeah. Went to my credit union, and man, oh man, all the GoBots I'm buying with that. So, boy, oh boy, Rob, we have been so busy lately. So busy. And I'm wondering if it's worth capturing or just dog-earing for a future talk about dealing with, I don't want to call it burnout. What would you call it, what we're experiencing? It's not burnout, but it's like where you lose track of a lot of stuff, like personal things in your life. You could become absent-minded and weird.
Yeah, it's a workload thing. Yeah. It's, you know, it's a trial by fire kind of thing also. I mean, some things that you get into or commit to, you can know the complexity on one hand, but then or the intensity of it, but then on the other hand, maybe you know, maybe forget how intense it is when you're actually in the midst of it.
I don't yeah, that sounds descriptive of what I've been going through. All I know is that if I'm so utterly dependent now on my phone to tell me where I need to be and when, that if I don't grab it the moment I make the commitment to do it, it's vanishing. It's just going to disappear off my radar.
Sure.
I've joked about that in the past, but it's really at that point now where, like, if you come up to me at any given moment of the day while I'm going through this deadline I'm going through, I just don't even remember what I did 10 minutes ago. It's just trying not to drown going through this stuff, which is a good problem to have, right? Being busy.
Oh, yeah.
Having work to do is a wonderful problem to have. And I don't want anybody to think that I'm complaining about the work itself, because not too long ago we did an episode where I was talking about that Brandon Dayton post on brandondayton.com where the only salvation from the two devils is the work. And yes, indeed, you feel good when you're in the work. But when the workload becomes too much, you can easily find yourself frazzled. Frazzled. Maybe that's better than burnout. You know, dealing with being frazzled.
Yeah, definitely. And for me, I really haven't said a whole lot publicly. I suppose I should say,
have to, if you don't want to, I'm not trying to egg you on.
I realize I don't want to be that dodgy. I actually wanted to, one thing I'm trying to figure out is I have an employer now, right? Mm-hmm. Which I haven't had like an employer in a while, a good 6 years or so, that I've been fully independent. I still do independent things, no doubt, but it's one of those things where, you know, you're signing all these materials and whatnot, going through the HR process, and modern employers realize, well, hey, maybe you do some social networking, maybe you do other things or whatever. So be sure to state your opinions are your own. And yeah.
Oh, weird. Yeah. It's been since before social media that you've had an employer.
Yeah.
That's kind of weird to think about. I don't even know what I would be like in that situation. Oh, wow. Yeah, that'd be a real awakening or a culture shock for me nowadays. It'd be like when I moved from my tiny town where I had 25 kids in my class to a class A school where I had like 250 kids in my class. Like that kind of a big awakening moment. The world is not what I knew it to be, you know?
Yeah, it's very much the same world. There's just a few other things tacked onto it. It's more steampunk than science fiction.
You said steampunk. Careful now. That's one of those internet words that makes people on Twitter go meh.
I'm a walking 1,000 mehs.
900 votes, 900 Rob bucks, and 1,000 mehs. Oh no! Oh no!
Working hard to do everything in mass, Jersey. To be efficient.
Anything worth doing is worth overdoing. But actually, the steampunk comment will probably come into a little bit of what I had brought for a topic today. Speaking of being busy, and this will lead into the topic, I'm already, you know, letting people in on what the segue is going to be. One of the things that I've been trying to balance on top of the freelance deadline that I'm facing, and anybody who wants to see what I've been working on, I've been posting lots of process stuff on my Twitter and Google+ and Facebook and whatever. But on top of that, I've also, this past weekend was Free Comic Book Day weekend, and I did a lot of events. Did the workshop at the Ann Arbor District Library, 3-hour workshop there, then jumped in the car, ran out to Dearborn, 40 minutes away, to spend the rest of the day doing Free Comic Book Day. I think I did somewhere in the neighborhood of 100 sketches for kids, free sketches.
That's awesome, dude. That's really
fun.
Cool that you did that.
It was super fun. It was super, super fun. And on top of it, I mean, Dan Mishkin and I make an awesome team, because I said to Dan, I said, okay, well, you know, this is a fundraising thing for KRC. So, you know, you work the Mishkin charm to harangue the parents for donations to Kids Read Comics while I entertain the kids by sketching for them. And so I'm doing the teachable thing with the kids where I'm like sketching, but I'm showing them what I'm doing and how I do it and whatever. Meanwhile, Dan is being, God, that guy is a force of nature when you watch him work his charm. But yeah, he was talking with the, so between the two of us, you know, we had a lot of action going on at the table. It was the busiest table at the event, which was kind of cool. By no means did it have anything to do with our name recognition. It all had to do with the fact that we were being charming and engaging with people and entertaining. And then on Monday, we had a group of Australians who are passing through our area, moving through the country. I think they went to the Mocha Art Festival, then they went to TCAF, the Toronto Comics Arts Festival, and then they were passing through Michigan on their way to Chicago, contacted us, said, hey, would you like to have a get-together to do a drink and draw? You bet, we did. Ran really long. Super, super fun. I took lots of pictures and posted those, too. But where was I going with this? See, this is how frazzled and tired I am.
You were talking about just the being engaging. And
Yeah. So on top of this deadline, I've been also managing all these public events and Kids Read Comics prep, and then also I teach classes, and that wasn't slowing down at all. I don't have a substitute to fill in for me. Anybody want to sign up? But while I was at The Monday night thing with the drink and draw, I was talking with some other cartoonists, and I was talking with some people who were exceedingly talented. Like, they were doing really, really good stuff. And they're doing it as a webcomic. And I'm talking to them, and I'm like, well, you know, what are your plans? What do you want to do with this? Where do you want to go with this? And, you know, just making the kind of talk that you make with cartoonists at shows. And this one guy was kind of like, well, you know, it's like, I don't really have a ton of traffic yet, and you know, I'm getting involved in these other things to try to build up some traffic, and I just don't know how to find my audience. This guy in particular was doing something that was aimed a little bit younger than your traditional internet user, you know, more kids kind of stuff, which is tough, right? And that's a tough one because 10-year-olds aren't going on the internet looking for webcomics necessarily.
Yeah, I mean, he's speaking right to your familiar wheelhouse, right?
Yeah, that's a definite pain point that I've struggled with. So I said to him, I said, well, you know, Sharon Iverson, who you've met, the Don of the Ann Arbor comic scene, in my opinion, she was at the event. And so I called Sharon over and I'm like, and I said to this guy, so like, have you ever thought of doing any library events? I mean, because there's your audience, kids who want to engage with comics. You know, you get to teach them something that's neat that you find interesting. You just get to talk about what you like. And then the kids are introduced to your work as a result of that. And I pointed out, you know, I said, Sharon, how much has my book circulated in the library's collection? She's like, it's on its last leg. We got to order a new copy. You know, it's circulated a lot, which is, there's your proof, right? And this guy was like, oh, gee, you know, I don't know what I would do for public speaking or doing a class or doing a talk or doing a workshop or anything like that. And he seemed interested. He was biting, but there was the initial bite of that sounds neat, and then immediately followed by, but what do I do? And so it turned into us talking a little bit about, like, me trying to say, like, well, you know, it's not, there's no trick to it. You don't have to be an expert at it. And as a matter of fact, they don't want you to be an expert. They want you to be somebody who's fun to talk to. They want you to be somebody who's going to listen to them and engage them. And I brought Dan Mishkin over, and because, you know, this is where I was going with this. I'm going to back up a little bit as I finish my anecdote, and then we'll kick into the topic. So the drink and draw starts. People start filtering in. And these are people who don't know each other. You know, there's all people. We had, I think, like 20 to 25 people over the course of the night. And when the initial 10 people showed up, these were people from all over Southeast Michigan who don't necessarily know one another. Some of them know me. Some of them just heard about the event. But in any case, these are people who don't know one another. You know what they did? Open up sketchbooks, sat down, started sketching. Silence, right? That's what we do. We're cartoonists. That's where we're comfortable, right? And so I'm trying to, you know, hey, I'm Jersey, and shaking hands. I'm thanking everybody for coming, doing the thing that I've already made a lot of noise about in the past, is that it's really important to me that everybody who attends gets a face-to-face notification from me that I am glad that they made the time to attend the thing, right? But even with that in place, you know, and I'm introducing people like, oh, so-and-so, meet so-and-so. I know this guy over here. This guy does this. This guy does that. Still, it's after the initial like shaking of hands, they went right back to their sketchbooks. And then Dan Mishkin walks in. Now, you've met Dan, Rob.
I have. As you said, I mean, he's a force of nature. I honestly don't know how having you two in the same room doesn't lead to just indoor tornadoes.
Dan once explained a secret to me, and he said that he doesn't know if it's a fault or if it's a how do they put it nowadays, a bug or a feature, that that he is incapable of assuming that anybody dislikes him.
It's super awesome.
Yeah, the more I thought about that, I was like, and when you know Dan, it's not arrogance talking. It's like he's honestly wondering if that's something that's wrong with him. He just assumes that you're gonna like what he is about, and that you're not gonna necessarily, you know, love him and want to throw underwear at him or anything, but you're gonna think he's a cool guy, and he's just incapable of thinking that people are gonna be like, what a jerk, even though it has happened to him in the past, and he acknowledges when that happens. It's just that he says in the moment, it doesn't even occur to him to think that, you know, which I think is a terrific way to operate. But yeah, Dan Mishkin walks into the room, and you could feel the temperature just change the moment that man walked in. It's like suddenly everybody felt more at ease. Everybody felt more at home, and there was a lot more talking going on. And within 10 minutes of Dan being there, everybody was talking. And I shot some video, which I posted on the web. Maybe I can link to it in the show notes. But it was a noisy room within minutes of Dan's arrival. And I credit him entirely with that whole dynamic change in the room. And so when I'm talking to this cartoonist, I brought Dan over. And we were talking about this whole idea of, like, what does it take to teach? What does it take to be engaging and everything? And Dan said, you know, it's like, you know, I talk a lot, but, you know, I think the number one thing is listening to people and responding to what they're saying and making them feel like what they're saying is important, you know, and really being honest and sincere about that. And so to which I said, well, Dan, do you think that what you do is a form of entertainment? And he said, oh, yeah. He said, yeah, because I'm delighting people with my presence. At least I'm trying to. And by listening and conversing and trying to amuse people in whatever way I can, you know, I am being an entertainer to help set people at ease, to make them feel, you know, more like this is a celebratory event rather than a networking, let's trade business cards, or a work event where let's get some drawing done, or, you know, it's an unstructured social event. To which it got me thinking about this topic. You know, as a guy who has done a lot of audio projects, talking with other cartoonists, and I'm not going to name names. I'm going to go back in time even further. This is pre-Comics Are Great. This is a long time ago when I was first starting this stuff, and I'd get into conversations online on shows with some cartoonists, and you know, you get them down there, and you're like, hey, tell me about your work. Tell me about what are you interested in? What are you excited about? Oh, I don't know. It's a thing. It's a drawing a thing, and I don't know. I kind of like it. And then it gets to be like pulling teeth. Come on, tell me about it.
I almost burst a blood vessel, so I didn't yell a bark a laugh into my mic.
I saw you do a Dizzy Gillespie on me.
No, yeah, exactly. I did totally Dizzy Gillespie. My word. Okay. Anyway, please continue.
Well, I'm going to finish my thought, and then I want to kick it over to you. It occurred to me that moment when Dan and I were talking with this cartoonist is I just discovered a podcast by one of my favorite voice actors, Rob Paulson, and it's called it's robpaulsonlive.com is the website, and it's a voice actor who does a talk show like Comics Are Great with other voice actors.
Whoa.
Yeah. So it's like him talking with Mark Hamill. Latest episode as of this recording is Mark Hamill for 2 hours just about voice acting. Not talking about Star Wars or any of that stuff. It's just about Mark Hamill's fascination with old TV and voice acting. It's terrific listening. It's him talking with Jeff Bennett, with Tara Strong, and all these different people who we've been listening to for years, but we're getting to hear, you know, what makes them tick and what they're interested in and everything. And the thing that I noticed is every guest is delightfully engaging and entertaining, even though they're not trying to be. And one of the things Rob said throughout many of the shows is like, we can't help it. This is like, we're compelled to be this way. We're compelled to be the center of attention and, you know, get people to laugh and look at me. But I also think that it's partially, I mean, that's their field. They're entertainers. They are actors. So they're used to using their voice in different ways to get people's attention and get them to feel what they want them to feel and so on. I thought about that, and I thought about what Dan said, and I thought about the moment that I was in, and it occurred to me that, boy, oh boy, I would love it if more cartoonists would think of themselves as entertainers. And I said this during this moment, and the cartoonist that I was talking to was like, oh, well, I'm not an entertainer. And I'm like, but you are. You're a cartoonist. You're entertaining with pictures. It's the same discipline. But, yeah, it's different than with using your voice. And I said, but, you know, the thing is that I've said this many times. I'm not smart. I think a lot about a lot of stuff, but I don't think of myself as like one of the smarter guys. I'm not John Hodgman, right? I'm not cocking my eyebrow, and I don't have an ascot on, and I don't listen to Sufjan Stevens, right? I'm not what you would classify as a smart guy in this day and age. I think about stuff, and I said, but I'm excited about stuff. And that's what my unique value is to this thing, is that I'm excited, and for whatever reason, that excitement is contagious with other people. And that's the thing that I try to use, I guess, leverage, whatever word you want to use for that. I said, so it's not about being the smartest guy or the funniest guy or the best looking guy or gal. Funniest gal. It's about whatever the thing that you do that is unique to you, that is natural to you, and then turning the volume up on that a little bit, or just using that a little bit more, right? But yeah, being entertainers, and I'm hoping you can help me crack the nut about what we mean by entertainment, because, or being an entertainer, because I think a lot of people are going to think that we mean being a stand-up comic, being funny, being, or oh, Jersey, you mean being really nice and helpful and sweet. Not necessarily. There's plenty of different kinds of entertainers. Don Rickles is not nice and sweet, right?
No. No, but I think there are some interesting common patterns. One thing I've noticed, so when I was putting together materials for turning jokes into comics, Laughing Yeti Monkey Spaghetti, which is one of the talks I do, it's a workshop or what have you, and I was realizing that some of the things I was looking at from you know, how do you convey, well, what is a joke, and well, what is funny, and breaking that down, and reading a few different things to help get more informed on the topic, that it has a lot, that and storytelling and just being interesting in a conversation, all these things have a lot in common, because it's about trying to find that delightful surprise that it could be something silly and non sequitur, something that you just feel is interesting and it adds texture to the conversation, or choosing to go a little less formal than the situation normally would require. Let's see, in a recent meeting where you know, so sometimes some of the things I do as a user experience, you know, architect or what have you, I'll interview people to understand, you know, some of their needs or whatnot, and I can convey this to other people I work with, and I referred to this person being on the same wavelength as me or similar motivations and in what they're doing, as he was my brother from another mother,
mm-hmm.
which wasn't expected in that conversation, and I'm not a genius for thinking of it or saying it,
right?
But it in the that specific situation, I got a room full of laughs for it, right? And it's not, again, it's not like, oh, I'm so clever. It's just finding that delightful twist mm-hmm. on normal things and what you're sharing. And so there is something about that delight and the surprise that I think is intrinsic to the entertainment pattern.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right. Finding that little bit of an edge to push it within the context of the moment, right? Yeah. Okay, so here's another moment where it was. I didn't say anything that I would call intrinsically funny, but in the context of the moment, it had its flavor or its power, right? At the drawing event on Monday, and one of my former students, who's now 18, and since he's no longer one of my students, he's just a kid that I know. You know, he gets to call me Jersey now instead of Mr. Droz and everything. And he comes over and he says, "Hey, Jersey, can I use your laptop for a second? I wanted to look something up." He was looking up reference for something. And I said, you know, okay, well, that's fine, but don't be looking through all my Transformers porn. And this kid knows I'm a big Transformers fan. And it wasn't that funny, but it was a shocking moment to him. It was a moment where I was trying to say to him, like, look, you're not my student anymore. Now you're my buddy. You know, you're mm-hmm. one of the guys now with me and whatever. We're both grown-ups now. But there was a moment where he was really taken aback and he caught the humor of the moment. It wasn't a big laugh out loud moment, but it was just, you know, that kind of thing. That's what we're both trying to do here is map that kind of, like, you're just punching the edge of something. But it's different than if I were to say, stay away from my, you know, blankety blank and insert really filthy meme here, you know?
Yikes. Yeah. It's that, well, okay, you're another aspect of what this is. So I guess we're talking about the kind of thing that you may choose to convey, but also and a little bit of the why it works, because things that are a little bit out of context but related in an interesting and delightful way are you know, that's fun. You're making an interesting choice by trying to find that thing, by being in that moment in that manner,
Yeah.
That's a different mindset than seeing, well, I only need to share this with you and you only need to say something to me, or and then we go our different ways to go back to sketching or what have you. Like, pass the salt, please.
Yeah.
I want to have salt on my fries and while I'm sketching.
And, right? Yeah, and I'm expressing enough words for the function of my idea to get across so that you understand, and then we can go back to doing what we were doing. That's different than, being in the moment is a big part of this thing of being, I think, engaging to whatever degree I've been engaging in the past. And I think I learned this primarily through doing these audio shows and talking with a lot of other artists. It trained me to, like early on, I would start out with like a lot of pre-designed questions, right? So I'd have like 3 pages of like, here's all the different directions this conversation can go. And then after doing that a few times and realizing that, wow, we only covered like a fifth of that, and we went in these 6 other directions that I didn't anticipate, I learned to just be cool with that, you know, and embrace it, and then also learn to look for it, you know, be in that moment and only be thinking. It's like, it's sort of like you're scrubbing ahead 1 minute in time, and that's as far as you will go. And so you're thinking ahead 1 minute to realize, to anticipate, well, where can this bit of the conversation go? What am I responding to? What am I thinking of? 1 minute ahead of time, and then go there when the time comes. But don't think any further than that, because if I'm too hung up on, am I funny? Am I clever? Does this guy think I'm good looking? Does this gal think I'm good looking? Are people going to like me after this? I'm not really going to be able to experience the actual conversation part of the thing, right?
Yeah, you're kind of taken out of it, which I was trying to, I think we're getting at other ways to define what engagement is.
Yeah.
Because it's a different kind of exchange than something that is just functional. And your motivation for doing it is different. And it's not just a go out and make everybody like you kind of thing. And somehow then the, I don't know, the world is yours. It's like,
you're talking like Carnegie.
It's a fun, right. You don't have to walk around being like a walking motivational poster.
It's about finding your tribe, right?
Exactly. It's a different way to relate to people, because you can discover, there's a lot of fun, useful things about that aren't sort of out of any kind of dark, manipulative, overly clever thing. It's just, it's interesting. And in finding your tribe, you mentioned, mm-hmm. how you can, let's see.
Well, let me go back to something we've talked about in the show a lot in the past.
Yeah.
I think something that is important to both of us is treating other people like human beings, right? And that's something we have, for the most part, control over for ourselves, right? But, you know, we're human too, and we screw up, and there are times where you're driving the car and somebody cuts you off and you do the whole, oh, you know, that guy's driving like a moron, or I'm going to make fun of that guy because he's old and he's driving, or whatever you do in a car when, you know, I'm not one of the fish shaking types, but you know, I have said like, hey, Clyde, careful, I want to live. But you know, when there's a sense of distance between you and the other, they are other from you. And where am I going with this? So I made no secret that I am not a huge fan of the Transformers Prime TV show, the most current Transformers show. I watched it when it first aired like a couple years ago. Oh, and Peter Cullen's in it, Frank Welker's in it, you'd think it'd be a win, but oh my gosh, it's so dry, and it's taking itself so seriously, and I wish it wouldn't. Would it kill you to make me laugh, people? Would it really break your show to have a chuckle in there every once in a while? I guess it would. But anyway, one of the characters, Bulkhead, is played by, I think, Kevin Michael Richardson, I think is his name. He was on Rob Paulsen's podcast. Now, when I heard Bulkhead's voice, now I watched Transformers Animated. Bulkhead was played by, I forget the actor's name, but he was on that show Coach. What was his name? Dauber. He was the big doofy guy. He has a very distinctive voice. But he was this lovable big dope on the Transformers animated series. They bring back the character in Transformers Prime, and now he's played by this guy with this really tough guy voice. You know, I'm doing a really terrible job of it. And so I was like, oh, that's awful. You just ruined Bulkhead because now he's a big tough guy. Before, he was this big lovable guy that you just wanted to hug. And then I heard Kevin Michael Richardson talk about his career and what is important to him. And I got to listen to this guy be funny and interesting and engaging. Mm-hmm. And suddenly, I don't feel so bad about Bulkhead anymore. Suddenly, I feel, I don't want to say I feel a connection. I don't feel like I want to watch Transformers Prime, but I'm not angry about that casting decision anymore. Because you know what? He's a dude, and he's giving it his level best. He's doing what he, you know, it reminded me that this guy was a human being. And it made me sympathetic to something that I wasn't sympathetic to before. And it made me want to treat this show like a human being again. So I wouldn't go on Twitter and say, Transformers Prime, super lame, everybody. And I'm here to tell you how lame it is. Sign up with me and let's join the Transformers Prime is Lame Club. You know what? I'm not going to make fun of it. Because I was reminded that it's a bunch of human beings doing their level best to create something. Even if it's not for me. You know, that's boring. I know it does not get me links or link clicks.
I'm so not retweeting that.
You know, but
Professor Sirius.
Where I'm going with this is that also being engaging is a way to, it's not just a way to build an audience and find your tribe, but it's also a way to be a human being in it, which sounds weird. It sounds counterintuitive because it's like, well, you're asking me to assume a persona. No, that's not what I'm saying. But in a way, it's kind of like that. But what it achieves is it makes people, it reminds people that we're all human beings, right? In a way.
Yeah.
So it has like a sort of like rising all ships effect as well, as dumb as that sounds.
Yeah, it can, because I think a lot of people aren't just at an event for some very simple, let's see, like wanting more time to sketch. I know actually I've, you know, going to some of the events in the Twin Cities, which some months I don't have time to do, unfortunately. That's how it's been lately. Like going to the Cartoonist Conspiracy events every first Thursday. And and there's this new event that local artist Dan O'Klanowski started called, something about Bad Waitress. I feel bad that I have not, that I don't remember the name of his event.
We prefaced this entire episode with how busy we've been. So
exactly. But I haven't even, there's two that have happened and it's like monthly and I haven't made it to any of them. But let's see. I know that the artists that go to those events there's some times when everyone's very quiet. Right. So I'm calling people out, I guess, pretty specifically, but I don't have like a whole big negative thing to unravel here. So yeah. No surprise drama for anybody, but sometimes people are really into just, you know, gosh, I'm so busy, you know, at work or with kids or whatever. This is time where this is my art desk basically. So I need to get these other things accomplished, you know, on my list of goals. And then there's the other times when it's a bit more social and people anyway. So it's not like binary in either direction and it's not black and white. This whole, I guess mostly, disclaimer that I've been going off on for a minute or two here reminds me of a curveball that I wanted to throw.
Oh, that, please. I'm exhausted. I am so ready for a curveball.
I've got a few actually that I've queued up, but, and I don't know, we may want to opt into this one in a future episode, but basically let's do an episode where we do no disclaimers. We just lay it all out.
Yeah. I've been thinking about that. Yeah.
Just drop the info. Here's what we're thinking. And
yes, I mean, that is something that I've been thinking a lot about, is that I was tempted at the beginning of this one to preface this by saying, this is an episode for so-and-so and such and such. You know what? I'm not going to say that because I don't know who this is going to be useful for. I'm just going to say it. And you know what's awesome? If you don't like what I'm saying, you can shut it off and I will never even know. I don't keep track of that. I don't keep track of who unfollows me on Twitter. Go ahead, unfollow. I'll just keep saying the things that mean something to me. That's something that, yeah, it's a bad habit I've got of disclaiming everything and prefacing everything. And
well, I mean, I think it can come out of that motivation to have those genuine connections.
Yeah.
And that's something about, again, the word engagement, where it gets used and abused. But I think overall its concept to me is you have a mutual connection. There is a feedback loop going on that you're not just broadcasting. You're not just listening. You're doing both. Mm-hmm. And by doing that, and when you find those right situations, because other people are sort of hunting for others that they're looking for others to join their tribe as well. Like that feel similar on the their whatever challenges they care about or whatever things they love to build and share observations on building them or just being silly, right?
Yeah. Or just feeling like they're connected to other human beings, which, you know, many people have said is a very important thing for us mammals, right? For one reason or another, mammals like to be around other mammals. Even cats, which are considered very aloof and sometimes very bratty creatures, you know, they need you to scratch behind their ears every once in a while. They get whiny if you don't. So, I mean, I don't think either of us intended on defining a specific use case for engagement. I think we can agree that it applies to a variety of positive outcomes. And I was also thinking about this, and I just want to back up a little bit. I'm going to back up three steps. I was thinking about this after I did that Comics Are Great episode with Eli Nyberger of Eulotricus, eulo.trico.us. Very, very smart guy. Fun guy to talk to. When he and I are in a room together, it's like when me and Dan Mishkin are in a room. It's like, you know, get your gas mask out because you're not going to be able to breathe after a little while. Or get your oxygen tank, rather. And one of the cases that he often makes, he's made it repeatedly on the show. He's been on the show a bunch of times, and he's kind of beat on this drum a little bit of, we're past the stage of the publisher-audience relationship. Those days are over, and we need to accept it. It's no longer, and if you buy into the concept that you don't have to ask a gatekeeper to give you permission to do your story, then you have to submit to the new rules of the game, which is internet culture. And internet culture is different than the old 20th century consumer culture. And he talks about it. And I linked it to it. And it's Comics Are Great episode 55, comicsaregreat.com/CAG55. I linked to a talk that he did where he defines what he calls internet culture and why it's different. But so I won't go into that here. But, you know, it's kind of built on ideas that have been talked about for a decade now, is that you have to, it's not enough for you to just make an interesting comic. You also have to make an interesting comic that you can monetize by making either products or ancillary items. And you have to be, and this was before webcomics too, you have to be an engaging human being when you go to shows, when you meet fans. You can't be the aloof, forget it, kid, I'm pushing you out of the elevator, I'm a star, and you're not. We don't get to do that. So if we accept this, if we accept these rules, and you don't have to accept this, but I'm saying if you do, then it stands to reason that a good way to help propel your career in whatever direction you want it to go is to be engaging in whatever way that you can. Now, I'm hoping, Rob, that between the two of us, we can define a few different types of engaging people to make it clear that, like, whenever I talk about this to people, they're like, well, that means I got to be a comics advocate like you, Jersey, because you just said that. No, anybody who listened to the Art and Story podcast, when I was doing that with Mark Rudolph and Kevin Cross, heard three very different kinds of entertainers using their specific vector into being engaging. And as I've heard from many people, that's what made it good. You know, we had very different opinions and attitudes about what it is to be funny, so, or interesting.
So in that kind of situation, maybe you get to watch how people engage vicariously. Kind of like why I listen to video game podcasts, because I often lack the time to play the video games.
I do think that was a part of it. I mean, I don't want to start talking out of school and start talking about stuff that nobody cares about anymore, but I do think that a big part of what made that show so well received was, and many people said this to us in these words, was it was like having art buddies in my studio. You know, mm-hmm. I was working alone in the studio, but there's three guys over there yucking it up behind me while I'm working. Totally get that. Totally get that. And so, yeah, that could be part of it. But I was thinking of it more of as like just as a quick example of look at that and you can see that we weren't all the same person, right? You can be entertaining. Now I want to just go off on a different tack here. Like Red Fox. Are you familiar with Red Fox's comedy? Sanford and Son?
Fredgie Sanford?
Yeah.
It's the big one. Yeah.
But his stand-up.
You big dummy, yeah.
But his stand-up was filthy. His stand-up was... Oh, sure. Yeah, it was very dirty. And like to the point where I listened to a few minutes and I was like, whoa, this is a little bit too randy for me. But Don Rickles or like, what's that? Louis Black? That guy who just shouts all the time? Sam Kinison? Trying to think of some other ones I really
those comedians will have sort of a blue act, for their sort of core comedic material, but then do a lot of things that are mass market.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. And then I think of people like say Jim Gaffigan. Are you familiar with Jim Gaffigan's comedy?
Not that I know of.
He mostly talks about food.
Oh, that's where I've heard this.
Yeah. He talks about food and he makes fun of his appearance. He talks about how pale he is and how pasty he is and how lazy he is. He'll eat pancakes for breakfast and he'll say, I guess I'm not showering today. But a lot of his humor is making fun of himself or making fun of his gluttony, which is appealing because I like thinking about food and talking about food. And it's funny to, he'll say one of his good jokes is, you ever eaten until you gotten sick? Isn't that the best? You know, it's like that's the gag. And we're like, no, but yes. So his stuff never attacks anybody specifically. It's not an aggressive, confrontational kind of humor. It's a very, some people would call it sissy humor by comparison to, say, like a Richard Pryor or, Don Rickles or somebody. Or, think of like Lenny Bruce or, I'm blanking on his name now. Another Southern comedian who is very, kind of out there and confrontational. But anyway, point is that you can look at, I think stand-up comics are a great group to look at, not to say, how do you be funny, but look at their approach. Look at who their intended audience is. Look at how their act is being used. Does that make sense? Like Mitch Hedberg, right? Mitch Hedberg was like he died not too long ago, but he was like the big kind of spaced out ex-addict kind of comedian where his stuff wasn't a story. It was just like a series of little jokes for like 2 hours, mm-hmm. This shirt says dry clean only. That means it's dirty. And then he moves on to the next joke,
Yeah. So, stand-up comedians are an interesting model also because, again, they are ultimate masters of finding those delightful twists and surprises. They wield this so skillfully and constantly and honestly so much so that it can be a little bit daunting where if you think about, I don't have anything that funny to say.
Right.
But I think we also had a few examples to counter that with you can just be looking for that a little bit of interesting twist to show that you care, you're interested, and if you have someone who's on a similar wavelength, they're probably going to be delighted by that clever twist as opposed to an hour-long act that is a giant series of jokes that are meant to be chained upon one another, right. Which is a very challenging art.
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, it's like anybody who's listening to this who's saying like, oh gosh, now I got to go study stand-up comedy. No. To say that is very similar. Do you got to go, Rob?
Oh, no.
Okay. I see you looking off.
I'm looking at my bookshelf.
Okay.
I'm looking for books to call out to me.
Oh, I see. Okay. So you're thinking 1 minute ahead as I'm talking to you.
Yeah. And ignoring you. Both.
See, there it was, everybody. To say that by using stand-up comedians as a model, it means that you have to study stand-up comedy is like saying that, looking at It's like the artist who says, I'm looking at Todd McFarlane's stuff and it's communicating to me and I don't know why yet. Well, I'm just going to draw like Todd McFarlane. No, you were connecting to something in there. There was something about the energy or the amount of detail or the layouts. There was something in there that was communicating to you, and it's your job to figure that out. It's your job to figure that out. You steal from them, sure, but steal the right stuff. Don't just steal what you immediately see on the surface, right? And when I'm saying, like, look at stand-up comedians, I'm saying look at their approaches, not the comedy itself. Look at their approaches and see what it is about it that resonates specifically to you. And that's going to give you some inroads to figuring out your unique value as an entertainer. So, like, for me, the people who communicate to me and have the most resonance are the people like the Jim Hensons and the Fred Rogers and the Mark Kisslers and the dynamic sweet people. And that they're the people who, whenever I see them behaving, I'm like, gosh, that always makes me feel really, really, really good when I see it. And when I was a kid, I want to be more like that, you know? That's the stuff where when I see it, it evokes an emotional reaction in me, a very keen emotional reaction. Whereas when I see a Lewis Black sitting up there shouting, I'm like, why is this guy so mad? I don't get it. I don't get the funny, because this guy, all I'm seeing is this guy who sounds like he's about to have a heart attack. And it's not making me laugh. And that's not to say that Lewis Black sucks. You know, it's just that his style doesn't appeal to me, right? That's what I'm talking about.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, please.
No, it's a really interesting thing. It's thought-provoking to think. It's a brilliant phrase. It's thought-provoking to think.
Laughing's my favorite thing to do. See, what I like about it is the laughter.
Exactly. That's what I love about doing this podcast with you, Jersey, because it's a hurdle. I mean, I had to get you to really go. I mean, you'll give me a laugh over a lot of things, and I appreciate that. So I try to earn it, but I partially think I'm you're
I laugh when it's not even funny. That's all
you're
it
ready
is.
To, yeah, you're just you're like just excited and ready to laugh, you know, which is pretty cool. But anyway, but I hope that
that's true. And you know, that's something where sometimes I'll admit I feel really self-conscious about that sometimes. Sometimes when I'm in a mixed group of people, I feel like I got to turn it down because people don't feel comfortable around that all the time. But, you know, on the other hand, it's like when we talked earlier about the whole, like, making disclaimers. It's like, God, you know, okay, I'm going to talk about another thing that gets circled around the internet every once in a while. And I mentioned it during that night with the drink and draw, and people got excited about this. So apparently not everybody's heard of this yet. Have you heard of The Complete Guide to Not Giving an F? And obviously, there's more letters after that. Have you heard of this?
I think I saw that go around Facebook.
Yeah, it gets passed around like every 6 months or so.
I could be mistaking that were for one of those kinds of lists of, be self-assured and...
Basically, it's...
Here's a fun way to say it.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is, Rob. Oh, man, that sums it up beautifully. I mean, it's nothing that we haven't thought of before, but it's a nice packaged kind of 10 or 5 things to think about. Like, let me see if I can find it.
You know, I am curious while you're looking that up. I've got a bit of a devil's advocate stance to throw here.
Please.
Why can't the art stand on its own? Or does the art and the artist always have to stand together?
No. The art can stand on its own. Let's go back to the Comics Great episode I mentioned with Eli on it. He talked about Sinfest. The webcomic on there, and that's a prime example of a guy who just did regular updates for many years, and he built up a huge audience, has no online presence outside of the comic itself. He has been quoted at different times, and I'm probably mangling the quote, but you know, it ran something along the lines of I don't have time for that. I got comics to make. And it's a beloved comic. It's published by Dark Horse now, you know, success, right? Didn't have to go and stand next to it. I mean, that's a great devil's advocate point, and I don't want anybody to walk away thinking that I'm saying, you, cartoonists, go out and be entertainers. not everybody can be, you know. Going back to what Rob Paulsen said in his podcast, there are people who are compelled to be entertainers. I got dragged in kicking and screaming. You know, I've said many times before, you know, 10 years ago when I first started this webcomic stuff, I did not want to have a presence on the site. Not at all. I wanted my characters to be my presence. And I talked through them. When they had a forum for the front, the characters were the ones who did the talking. I did not have an account in the forum. And even when I would meet in the IRC chat with my readers on update nights, I would often go in there as my characters. And when I showed up as myself once, they were shocked. They were like, I don't know about this. This is weird talking to Jersey. You know, even though they knew they were talking to Jersey before, they were just talking him through his characters. So it's not.
Yeah, that's a very artist stance to be in, honestly. I mean, you're not, that's more of the like the costumed approach to interacting with an audience versus publication approach, where you're occasionally releasing something and you're speaking to your audience. You may hear some response to it or know in some way if it was viewed a lot or whatnot. But yeah, I mean, that's different. That's almost the same as having a conversation with them. It's just that, well, there's this pretext of, well, you've got, you know, Kermit the Frog on your hand or what have you.
That's exactly what I was going for at the time. You know, I was really inspired by seeing Jim Henson on The Tonight Show years ago when I was a child. And, you know, Johnny Carson says, like, I notice you're not moving your lips, or you're not trying to disguise the fact that you're moving your lips while you're doing Kermit. And Jim Henson said, because nobody's looking at me. They're all looking at Kermit. He's the interesting one, not me. And I thought, oh, that's a great way to look at it, is the artist doesn't matter. The work is what matters. That was really where I stood in 2002, 2003. But then over the years, when I started getting into teaching, I got dragged into, you know, doing more public work, and I saw the value in it. I wouldn't be doing this if I didn't think it had some kind of value, if I didn't want to, you know, do something of use to somebody, you know. But anyway, yeah, so my point is that there are people who are compelled to do it. There are people who I think can do it and can do a decent job of it, but they just, you know, need a little nudge like I did. And then there are people who just, you know, it's not in them. They're not that kind of person. They're a complete and utter introvert. Being around other people is taxing to them, and that is totally cool. I don't want anybody to think that I'm saying you have to do it. I'm just saying that for people who can carry on a conversation with others for more than 15 minutes at a go when they're in a safe place, and they're wondering, well, gee, what else do I need to do with this comic stuff or whatever creative project you have, that maybe you need to go out and be a little bit more of an entertainer and think of yourself that way. And when I say that, it comes with a responsibility as well. This isn't about like, oh, I'm just going to go be silly. It comes with a responsibility of, this is a dicey place I'm going. Because I really don't think that we have to feel beholden to be consistent creatures on the internet, even though the internet begs us to be. The internet wants us to just never, ever deviate from whatever cardboard cutout version of us it has assigned us, you know? But we're human beings. We're going to be inconsistent, right?
Right.
But at the same time, I think that there are rules of engagement. You know, I had to define what are the tribal rules that I have. Like, to be in my tribe, here are the rules. And one of those rules is that you don't get to exclude people just because they like something different than you, or draw differently than you, or like a different kind of music or movie or book than you. Nobody's playing high school club or clique in my tribe. If you want to be around, and if I find you doing that around me, I'm shutting off. I'm shutting down and I'm going to go someplace else. You know, that kind of thing. Like, that's a line I won't cross. That's my line of whatever you want to call it, integrity or whatever.
Let's see. This is an almost disclaimer territory, but it's when you create a distinction between different ideas, especially if someone's going to play devil's advocate, this is like totally mischievous making. If you're, I mean, we're gonna, I'm gonna still try to not do disclaimers. Mm-hmm. So just, but I may be splitting hairs here.
It's not a disclaimer; it's a caveat.
Exactly. Allow me to redefine the terms of the game so that I might win.
Ooh, Kobayashi Maru to you.
Yeah. Well, let's see. And that, yeah, then I've lost my actual main point, which that's all right.
Yeah, well, your initial question was, is that do you have to, can the work stand without the artist? And of course it can.
And so the different, it's acknowledging that the different approaches exist. Yeah. And that, and honestly, and this is an example I've pulled out before, but I don't know if I would have been as fascinated and excited by the whole mythology that H.P. Lovecraft created if I would have known how incredibly racist he was. Mm-hmm. From what I understand from reading,
that's a good point.
A few different things where it's just speaking of, exactly. It's that whole, well, knowing your lines as far as, well, where do you feel comfortable and what do you feel is good for your tribe and what's healthy or whatever you're going, however you want to define that. And it's like, I wouldn't have been the guy's friend likely. Right. I mean, I don't know. Probably not. Mm-hmm. So when you run into that situation, you may think, well, shoot, I wish I would have not known about this artist. True. So I think there's a lot of funny examples in the spectrum of possibilities with all this. But when you say, okay, if you're at the situation where you're excited to leap into the conversation and are thinking about what's next, there you go. That's what we're talking about, I think. And then trying to give you different hooks into what the heck is engagement and provide some examples.
And the cool thing is that I think it's something that you get to screw up on. You know, it's not something where we have to be terribly precious. You know, one of the things that gets kicked around a lot in a lot of discussion circles is like, oh, the public record, what you say on Facebook today will be fine. The picture of you at the party is going to be seen. Let's go back to our earlier discussion. You had the picture of you at the party going bleh, as everybody's got that picture on the Facebook page, apparently, of you with your arm around a girl going bleh, we're drunk at a party, and your boss sees it. Oh, no, you know. So there's like this kind of like idea that's perpetrated that like all this stuff is public record forever, ever, ever, ever. And the truth of the matter is that maybe some of that stuff like your Facebook timeline or whatever, it stays there. But who's going through that, right? Who's going back to 2011 or 2010, 2009 on my Facebook timeline to go, what was he doing in February 2009? It's like most of us are so obscure, and that's just going to become more and more of a problem as more and more people become content creators and more people are online. If you're talking about the thousand super fans, that means that there's how many billions of people on the planet who are not paying attention to you, you know? So you get to screw up.
Exactly. Think about the act of someone sifting through that information and seeking to punitively classify you. And are they welcome in your tribe? Do you want to be in theirs?
Right.
I know my answer.
Yeah.
You know, that's anyway. Exactly. It exists though. It's funny. Sure. I am not like by any means like a super active dude on Twitter or in the social networks, and especially in the recent, shift in my schedule. Yeah. And because first I went from a full-time contract, which, I mean, I've done like really, you know, pretty high workload contracts, but I've purposefully tried to construct things to be more flexible. And that shifted in the last few months, which then that also led to, now I'm an employee somewhere, which is, anyway, a way to say where, especially recently, I'm not that active out there. But even I, with my level of activity on Twitter, I have like I have multiple thousands of tweets. I don't remember how many it is at this point. Yeah. I feel like I should look it up since I'm saying it here. And click on the thing. Holy moly, 4,563 tweets as of this moment.
Wow.
That's not, what's funny is that sounds like a big number to me, but I don't know, I joined in 2008, whatever. I know family members that see that sort of thing and they definitely feel judgments as far as like, you have the time to do that. Like even like the meta thing, they're not even looking at the content of what
right,
you're saying.
Right. No, like, I have the same problem where I've gotten emails from people like, I see you're tweeting. You're tweeting just fine, but you haven't answered my email yet.
Like, exactly. And anyway, people interested in making those kind of judgments. And honestly, they're not familiar with that situation because they choose to not be engaging online. And if you've done it for a while, it's funny. I mean, like when you pick up a you pick up an interest in an artistic pursuit, and if you practice it and you start finishing things and then you keep finishing things after a while,
to it a certain actually, degree, it becomes effortless.
Right? Yeah. And it adds up over time.
Yep. Yep. You're right. No, you're absolutely right. Like when, so Sunday, or no, Saturday when I was at the Free Comic Book Day workshop at the Ann Arbor District Library, we didn't get the turnout we had hoped for. We had maybe 10 people show up. It was supposed to be a family event, so it was supposed to be like, you know, 60 people, all families that I could assign. And the agenda for the day is that each family was going to be an artistic team. So Dad, you're going to be the writer. Mom, you're going to be the inker. Junior, you're going to be the penciler. Sally, you're going to be the letterer, whatever. You know, everybody gets a job, and then you all create a comic as a team. That was the big idea. Well, when only 10 people show up and some parents just drop their kids off, so there are kids who didn't have family teams, I was like, I got to rejigger this thing fast. So I broke out my great big giant jam comic idea where everybody starts in a corner, works towards the center.
Mm.
Well, somebody who was there was like, whoa, did you just come up with that? That was amazing. Because like all these kids who are total strangers to each other were all like talking and conversing and collaborating. It was very rewarding. It was an awesome experience. I was very proud of that moment. But this person who was there witnessing it said, like, did you just come up with that now? And I'm like, well, no, I've done this before. But yeah, you know, it's like that's part of my job is to feel the room and work with it. When I see that the crowd that showed up didn't turn out to be the crowd I expected, what am I going to do? Am I going to go like, oh, I guess I screwed it up.
Yeah.
I guess this isn't happening.
Fail.
Everybody go home, you know, canceled, you know, or do you just, you know, quickly work with it? Well, that's a skill that I picked up from doing, you know, doing my 10,000 hours or whatever, right? But to the public's eye, it doesn't come off that way, right? So, like, they see, like, you got, like, a lot of tweets. They're not seeing that it's you going, like, I ate a hamburger. You know, here's a picture of my dog or whatever we do.
Exactly.
So. But it, to a certain degree, it also becomes effortless to also just like identify capturable moments too, right? So that's where I was really trying to go with that.
Ah, yeah, that's another interesting thing is it's engaging in that filter with your own information instead of just blurting out, you know, here's the functional thing, here's my business card, you know, have you checked out my comic and whatever, whatever. It's your, let's see, I don't, your filtering and finding out what's more interesting right there. You're two people or a group of people, 10 people in a room. What makes sense right now?
Yeah. I had that filtering moment this afternoon. So I ran out to grab some takeout for me and Anne. And I'm on the streets of Ann Arbor and I see a couple, an older couple, they're maybe in their 50s or 60s. Driving matching Vespas. So it's like an older couple. They got helmets on with the microphones. Like, you know how like bikers traveling cross country travel with like the helmets with the microphones on it so they can all talk. But they're on, one guy's on a silver Vespa. The wife's on a pink Vespa. And they're just going up and down the streets. They passed me three times. Just, they're just cruising. They're cruising the streets. And man, I was tempted. I was like, I want to grab this. This is so cute. And I pulled up my phone. I'm ready to take a picture. And I thought, A, they're going to see me doing this. And I don't know if they're going to feel okay with that, even though they are in public. And B is like, who do I share this with? If I put this on the internet, I don't want people to think I'm making fun of these people because I thought it was adorable that there was this older couple that was cruising the streets on their matching Vespas, you know? I don't want people to misinterpret this as me going like, look at the, you know, the foolish old people being dumb or something like that. So that filter engaged and I captured that moment for myself. And I'm sharing it on the show, but I didn't capture it in the picture and share it on Twitter or anything like that. But there's sometimes when I do that. You know, I posted on Instagram today. It's like I was in a place where I was looking down at a building. I saw a playground on top of a building. Neat. Rabbit. Oh, yeah. Right? That was a moment that I thought was shareable within the context of the narrative that I've constructed for myself.
And is that the ultimate thing you're building toward? Is having some kind of, you know, conscious... I wrestle with this, like how aware do you need to be of all these things? So I'm watching things, figuring out what delights me. I'm paying attention and being in the moment in the room to try to find something delightful to say or see who else is interested in the kind of things I'm interested in. And then when I'm there, maybe I feel like sharing a moment, and then I got to think about, is this part of this whole public persona thing and whatever? I mean, anyway, there's a lot of things that we're naming that could be thoughtful components of this overall practice.
Yeah. You're putting words on it that I think are appropriate, but also potentially misleading in the sense that I don't want people to think like this is something where this is a skill that, you know, takes years to develop and, oh, I'm so smart because I do this. This happens in the blink of an eye. It's a reflex. You know, that thing with the Vespas, when the people were driving by, it was like, it really was in a blink of an eye, the thought of, God, that's cute. I'd love to capture that. Who would I share it with? Not anybody. Never mind. You know, it was really just, it was faster than that. It was at the speed of thought that filter engaged. That filter engages through practice, through just doing it a lot and making mistakes. And like, I've done things where I've shared thoughts and stuff online that were a little bit more negative than what I feel comfortable with. And I just forget about it. You know, it's weird. It's like, it sounds like I'm constructing something. It sounds like I'm building my brand or I'm building my persona. But ultimately, let's talk about going back to this idea of throwing away the disclaimers. You also just got to be a person. You got to be a person. And I think being engaging comes out of being a human being and treating others like human beings and finding that balance between expressing what excites you while being mindful about who's the recipient of that thing, just as if you're in a conversation in a public place. If I'm in a public place and I'm in front of my students, I'm not going to go, oh man, I love bourbon. I do love bourbon. I think bourbon is great. I love to drink bourbon. Not, I don't drink it all the time, but when I have bourbon nearby, I'm like, this is awesome. I'm so happy to have this, you know? Mm. The context of that moment isn't appropriate for me to be talking about bourbon. When I'm around a bunch of adults who are in their 50s and 60s and don't necessarily watch cartoons, I'm going to be mindful of, is this the time to bring up why I think Rodimus Prime was a missed opportunity in the Transformers franchise? You know, I mean, there's different times and places. We change the way we behave around different groups of people, right?
And I think it's totally natural and reflexive, and I think it's part of how we are social creatures.
Yeah.
And I think that while that is a behavior that has a lot of use and whatnot, it doesn't have to be... Yeah, I guess it's transparent enough if someone's doing that out of, I don't know, the not the desire to connect, basically. If someone really cares about understanding what you have to say and you care about understanding what they have to say and then you keep saying things,
yeah,
that's just way different than someone saying, oh, okay, hey, have you ever thought about how you can increase the traffic to your website? Oh, cool. I do the side business of, you know, and doing some kind of pitchy thing.
Yeah.
I think there's times for that too.
I think
but,
so.
You know, it's like a business context or whatever, but this is, our conversation today isn't about that. It's about the connecting. And I think that's the thing where, you know, engagement isn't just saying, oh, I got so many responses to this thing I did, or I did make the whole room laugh or whatever. I mean, you can be just talking to one person and it's not about the big popular social networking.
Yeah, thank you for saying that. That's a really big one too, is that, you know, I was at an event years ago where I was there to do some comics advocacy kind of stuff, and I was there with some other artists, and maybe, I think like 7 people showed up to the thing. And one of the artists said to me afterwards, like, do you think this was worth it? And he at least was saying it in the sense of like, I'm kind of thinking it wasn't, but I want to see if you thought it was, right? So at least it was that. It wasn't like, man, this is a waste, you know? But he said, you know, do you think it was worth it? And I said, gosh, you know, I mean, there were 3 kids in here who were kind of dragged in by their parents. They didn't really know much about our art form or what made it work or why they should care about it. And I saw at least 2 of them get really excited about what we were doing. You don't know what those kids are going to do after this. Like, I'm not going to judge an event on its size. I'm going to judge it on what its effect and what its heart is. That sounds dumb. That sounds really stupid and really touchy-feely. And yeah, I know. Okay. But connecting doesn't have to be like there's such, I really resent sometimes the whole gotta catch them all mentality of Twitter. Like, I've got X amount of followers. The person who says, like, I can't believe all the new followers I got today. Hi, new followers. Calm down. It's okay. You know, it's like, you got followers. So think about them. You know, and I hate that they're even called followers. I wish it could be called something else.
It is a bit. There's all so much abusive words and terms and whatnot. I often, like, one of the, let's see, it reminded me of a bunch of different things from what you just said. But sometimes why I don't post a tweet is because I got distracted researching the actual definition, the actual, you know, denotation of a word and its etymology.
Yeah,
especially phrases too. Where if I'm about to whip off think about this sentence I just said, like the phrase "whip off," right? Like,
yeah.
I'm like, where the heck did that come from? Etymology of whip off.
Yeah,
and because I'm really into communication, basically, and then I get all nerded out and off on a tangent. Maybe I never finished the thing I started, but yeah, which is something I would like to, I need to work on.
Well, you're pointing out an interesting paradox here, is that what I'm trying to drive at is getting people to relax so that they can be more outgoing.
Yeah.
Right? You know, that's the hard part is like, on the one hand, it's like, yeah, I totally get, like, be responsible and, you know, don't be a jerk and all that stuff. But at the same time, relax and be yourself. God, you know, that's such a grown-up-y thing to say. That's so not useful to anybody. But what I'm trying to drive at here is, like, you just pointed out a perfectly valid reason to hold your tongue. Wait until I got something that's worthwhile saying.
I tweet about this that I forget what I said, but it was essentially I ended up deleting most of the things I go to post.
Yeah.
Or I archive it off in a text file or in NVALT or what have you. And what's funny is actually that started a conversation, which was, it was interesting to see where that went. It had a little conversation, I think, on Twitter and Facebook, both. And, you know, people are of different minds where someone saying, well, yeah, exactly. And you should, you know, only, you know, publish about 10% of what you create. And I thought, you know, that wasn't my point. But hey, interesting dialogue.
Sure. Yeah.
And also, there was the idea expressed that perhaps that approach isn't genuine. And honestly, that was exactly the opposite of my message, is that I overthink crap. That's what I do. That's my job. And that's one of the reasons, you know, it's like, I do that because I get fascinated about a ton of different things about communication. And I can have the quirk of, an old habit that I think overall I've squished, which is to not share stuff. Cause I used to not share stuff too.
Mm-hmm.
But, anyway, it's, I don't know. I'm pretty cool with my own quirks, and it was fun. I had a fun time, you know, doing a talking about that, which is kind of meta.
Well, you know, here's where we get a little bit more meta. You had a conversation not too long ago that I was present for, where someone looked you dead in the eye and said, "You think very abstractly, don't you?" And to which you were like, "Yeah," and.
I look for connections in things, even though maybe I don't, do I really need to, or in sort of the, you know, eat, sleep, you know, poop somewhere and all that kind of need, Maslow's pyramid, which I obviously
we've talked about that before on here. Yeah.
That's not exactly the sections of the pyramid. It's more about the, you know, the basic needs, going up to self-actualization, from foundation to the peak. But, yeah, it's, and I'm so cool with that and I'm not worried about it. It leads to some awkward conversations.
Well, as anybody who gets involved in conversations, I think has, awkward moments here and there. Right. And I think this is where we can maybe find a closing thought is that, you know, it's like something that Campbell once said in one of his talks was, and this ties into something that people love to throw around whenever they're giving writing advice is make your characters flawed. Yeah. What's lovable about a person is their faults. Perfection is anything but lovable, right? Mm. Think about anybody who you've ever cared about and what's going to be the memorable thing about them is that weird quirk, that weird tick about them that somebody would call a flaw. But that's their characteristic. And I think that that's another aspect of this whole thing of about being entertaining is to embrace your flaws. Accept the fact that, yeah, you know what? When people start taking their clothes off in a movie, I get uncomfortable. And I'm a grown man. Why is that making me uncomfortable? You know, but that's one of the weird quirks that I have. And to some people, that's endearing. To some other people, not so much. Some people think I got a problem. But... you know, I think that just being mindful of that, of being aware of that, and you know, finding the humor in that. Another thing that I want to point at is one last link to throw out is the Mental Illness Happy Hour podcast, which I only discovered because Paul F. Tompkins was on it, and I follow just about everything that guy does. But there was one of the writers of the David Letterman show, the head writer of the David Letterman show, was on there. And she was talking about how coping with a bad childhood made her a good comedy writer. And by learning to deal with terrible things that happened to her, it conditioned her mind to always find the humor in bad, in tragic moments, right? Mm. And I think that's part of it too. I'm not saying like, oh, channel all of your bad childhoods or whatever, but also, you know, finding humor in, you know, what makes you, you know, icky or broken or whatever word you want to throw on it, like, you know, whatever your quirks are, makes you unusual. But I mean, it's just like I hope we got it, this idea that, you know, I've heard people say like, oh, I don't like to use Twitter too much because I feel a compulsion or I feel like I have to be funny when I'm on there. And there's different kinds of funny. You know, there's different kinds of entertainment. There's different kinds of engaging. And I don't think that any of us should be going into this thinking that we got to catch them all. I don't think anybody should be going into any kind of like outreach, publishing, connecting with people, thinking that they have to grab a mass audience. You should be finding the people who write for you. And every after school special has taught us that if you be yourself, you will find the right ones. But there's a way to do it mindfully. And I want to admit that this is a completely selfish thing on my part. I just wish more cartoonists would be outgoing and speak about their craft in a compelling and thoughtful way, like that Rob Paulsen podcast. As I was listening to it, I was like, why aren't there more comics podcasts like this? So.
Yeah. Is it so? Yeah. We're social creatures. There you go. And yeah, selfishly, I like to connect with other social creatures interested in the same things. And we do, yeah, I totally see too many artists of different ilks just holding things back and not even being like one of the models where you know, you can see people working on being social and connecting online or in person. Maybe they're a little brash or maybe they're a little whatever, but you know, hey, at least... I don't know. At least they're trying. At least they're getting some kind of experience through that, right? And probably connecting with people because they're doing it.
Yeah. You know, the guy who is attacking other people on Twitter or attacking, talking about politics or, you know, attacking particular religious groups or religious people.
Being mopey and self-deprecating.
Yep. yeah, they're not necessarily speaking to me, but they're speaking to their tribe, right?
Yep.
So, yeah, that's the other thing that I think is really important in this, is that too many people get a little prescriptive about what it means to be engaging, when all engaging means is that you're being outgoing about what you care about. Yeah.
Cool. And I would say connecting with that is paying attention to others who are doing the same thing.
There you go. Yeah.
Well, cool. How do you know you've engaged unless you pay attention to what comes back?
Ah, there's the litmus test. Thank you for that, Rob. Yeah, until you paid attention to what's coming back, that's good. That's really good. That has helped inform ways that I've changed my behavior in the past, which we'll save for another show. Well, gosh, thanks. Thanks for letting me ruminate about this, because this was kind of sticking in my mind after the other night. So this is where we say, if you listen to this and you thought this was kind of interesting and, you know, you left with a few thoughts afterwards, or it was at least entertaining to hear us in the background kind of chew on this idea, a great way you could help us out is here's the free way. The free way is go to iTunes and give us a star review on iTunes for the Lean Into Art cast. Just do a search for Jersey Drozd or Rob Stenzinger or Lean Into Art cast in iTunes and just give it. You don't even have to write a full review. Just take a few seconds of your time. Give us a star review. If everybody who listened to this show today, the day you're listening to this, went and gave it a star review, you would rocket us up through the is it called? The listings, and a lot more people would discover this. The reason is not to help our egos, because I really don't even look at it. But it's what it is to help other people find us. And if you think this stuff is useful, and if you think it'd be useful to other artists, you don't even have to go on Twitter and say, hey, check out this thing. Just give us a star review. Boom, you've done your part. And it takes a few seconds of your time. It's anonymous. You don't have to harangue anybody, harass anybody. And you know what? Rob and I aren't checking it anyway, so it's not like our feelings would be hurt if you don't. But, you know, it's an anonymous, easy way to do it. But the other way you can do it, if you really like
it. I check it sometimes.
you're ruining my mystique of my persona. The other way that is not free, but if you really care about this stuff and you want to support it and you want to help us cover our costs of making this stuff, is to go to leanintoart.com/workshops. Rob mentioned his workshop, Turning Jokes into Comics, Laughing Monkey Spaghetti Yeti. Did I get that right? Did I do it wrong? Laughing Yeti Monkey
Spaghetti? Laughing Spaghetti Pile of Monkeys.
Laughing Monkey Town. That's the name of his workshop. No, Turning Jokes into Comics. It's a workshop that you get for a mere $25 at leanintoart.com. And you get the downloaded file. There's no DRM on it. You could pass it around to all your friends. We'll never know. But that $25 will help us keep the show running, because we do pay for our own hosting. We pay for our own recording equipment and software. So that would be, it's a value for value, right? You get something, we get something. So leanintoart.com/workshops. Is there anything else that we need to plug or promote, Rob?
No, nothing right now.
Okay.
Working on stuff.
We just got to get through this next 2 weeks. Well, me, I got to get through this next 2 weeks, and then I'll be a human being again.
Yes, I am. Yeah, for me, I don't know when that transition will come. Someday I will curl into a ball, and there'll be this big goopy pile that'll shellify around me, and I'll bust out of it and flap away like a pretty butterfly.
He's a papillon.
Anyway, no, lots of stuff in progress. I mean, we're talking with other teachers, and there's things happening more workshops that.
This summer, you're going to get to see the Lean Into Art guys together at Kids Read Comics, kidsreadcomics.org. We're going to be in Michigan for a weekend in July, 7th and 8th. So do come. Take a workshop with Rob live and in person.
Cool.
So, and then maybe even hang out with Rob after the show. I'm pimping him out all weekend. So anybody, you know, $5 ahead, you want Rob all to yourself for an evening.
Driving a tour bus, making stuff up about Ann Arbor. We'll probably stop by this one arcade that I've
Pinball Pete's.
Exactly, Pinball Pete's.
All right. Yep. So, okay. Well, thanks everybody for downloading and listening. Until next time, I have been Jersey Drozd of comicsagreat.com and Jersey on Twitter.
And I've been Rob Stenzinger of interactive-storyteller.com and Rob Stenzinger on Twitter. Thank you.
Okay. Bye.
Show notes for this episode can be found at leanintoart.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at the user leanintoart, and you can reach us via email at leanintoart@gmail.com. And remember, leaners aren't wieners. Thanks for listening.